Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 48 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. This season, I'm sharing new episodes every Monday discussing all things vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Did you know that I offer one-on-one coaching? If you found inspiration in these episodes but want more accountability or help guiding you through exploring a vegan lifestyle, check out my website for more information. In the last few episodes, I've given you quick challenges to bring more vegan items and vegan thinking into your life. How's that going? And 2 weeks ago, I asked a pretty big question. Have you thought about your why for going vegan? If so, what's coming up for you? And if not, why not? If you're still not clear on how going vegan can change your life and the lives of so many others, check out the Vegan Voyage on my website. This is a 12-week one-on-one coaching program that gets you fully into the vegan lifestyle in only 3 months. What took me years to uncover and learn, I will teach you in just 90 days. Be sure to book a free coaching call with me before signing up so you can be certain you have all of the information you need. There's a good chance you'll find additional inspiration in this episode, so take a listen and stop by my website after. Today, I am joined by Tony Okamoto. Tony is the founder of Plant-Based on a Budget, the popular website and meal plan that shows you how to save dough by eating veggies. She's also the author of Plant-Based on a Budget cookbook and the co-host of the Plant-Powered People podcast. Tony's work has been profiled by NPR, NBC News, Parade Magazine, and she's a regular presence on local and national morning shows around the country, where she teaches viewers how to break their meat habit without breaking their budget. She was also featured in the popular documentary What the Health. When she's not cooking up a plant-based storm, she's spending time with her husband and their rescue dog in Sacramento, California. Tony's enthusiasm for eating well without breaking the bank or spending hours in the kitchen really comes through. Many of Tony's recipes are in the regular rotation in my kitchen. I have no doubt if you pick up either of her books or check out her website, you'll quickly find the same to be true. She's also incredibly relatable and super fun to talk to. Here's my interview with Tony Okamoto. Hey, Tony. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Me too. I've got a ton of things I want to talk about, including peanut butter tofu and your new book. But first, I'd love to start. Share with me your vegan journey.
I have been vegan now for 16 years. Nice. But before that, I was vegetarian. And before that, I didn't eat red meat. And how that happened was because I was a runner. I was running track and I was feeling really sick every day. And my coach suggested that I stop eating so much red meat and so much Taco Bell, which was my favorite thing to eat.
I know.
And it was interesting because at that time I had never considered how the food I was eating would impact me or fuel me as an athlete or affect my performance. And that question was really striking and it sparked a wave of changes over the next 5 years. And it was really hard on my parents. They thought, how could this ever happen to us? But we've all managed. And I would say it took me slowly and gradually changing for the next 4 years, really, until I joined a vegetarian club at a college, community college. My ethics professor, it was an intro to ethics class, did 1/3 portion on animal ethics and as extra credit had people go to the veg club on campus. And because I was already vegetarian-ish, I felt like, all right, let's do this. I need extra credit. So I'm going to go get some free food and hang out with some people. And I really stuck. The people were really inclusive. And I felt like they were experiencing a lot of my similar obstacles in life. Like they were on a tight budget. A lot of them were culturally rooted in the foods that they grew up in. And it was a big part of how they wanted to eat. Mm-hmm. And And all of that together with their support, I felt like I could take the next step forward and embraced a vegan lifestyle.
Nice. That is wonderful. And so how did you come to, so you mentioned a little bit about people being concerned about the cost of food, but now you're like the expert on vegan food on a budget, writing books about it. That's, you know, your name, your handle on Instagram and everything is also plant-based on a budget. So how did you become, why, what made that the focus of the work that you do today?
Well, I, at the time, especially, was on a very tight budget. I left my family's house sort of on bad terms. It wasn't bad terms. I was just tired of parents being parents and caring about me too much. And I said, fine, I'm going to move out. But I didn't really have any money saved. So I shared a bedroom with multiple people. I worked odd jobs, and a lot of them, I at times didn't have a car. And I really felt the struggles really challenge me and my desire to be plant-based. And so as soon as I started getting a hang of it, a lot of my family members were suffering from pretty severe diet issues, like diet-related issues, like type 2 diabetes and heart disease. And I unfortunately had a few passings. My aunt died of type 2 diabetes after having multiple amputations. And my grandfather, who helped raise me, died in complications in a triple bypass surgery. And it's really tough watching your family members suffer awfully. And I, at the time, already started being an activist and identifying in that way. And I saw this need for a resource that specifically addressed what I heard from my family and my friends and my surrounding community, which was it's too expensive to eat healthy. It's too expensive to be plant-based. And the association with vegan and even vegetarianism and plant-based is Whole Foods or your natural foods co-op or a certain type of person looking a certain type of way. And so it made me feel sad that people who really could benefit, my family members, from the fresh produce available and the delicious whole food plant-based ingredients that could make food that they love, felt like it was unattainable to them. And that there was a lack of nutrition education in this entire community, and that there was a lot of sadness as a result of that. So all of that combined led me to starting plant-based on a budget, which originally consisted of recipes only. But after doing it a while, it caught on, and I found that a lot of people were interested. And I think it's so easy to write off folks who are going through the drive-thru a lot or who are feeding their kids ramen often, which is what my favorite food was growing up. And so I feel like it's so easy to make assumptions, but what I have felt is that so many people want to eat healthier and feed their kids healthier and to make sure that they are not suffering from pre-diabetes or other long-term health effects, but they just don't know where to start and they're cost conscious. And so that is what I focused on for the past, that is what I have focused on for the past 11 years now.
Wow. Well, thank you for that, because it is so, it's so important. Because I too have heard people say, well, you know, I could go to the grocery store and buy all of this produce that maybe we'll eat because I'm so crunched for time, or I could go to the drive-thru where I know my kids will eat and they can eat it in the car and it'll cost me $20 instead of the $60 I'd spend at the grocery store, because they can't see that it can be made quickly. It can be made where the food will be enjoyable, and you even can pack certain things up and eat them in the car too, if you need to. And I love that about your first book, Plant-Based on a Budget. At the beginning, after we read your story, we get 30 different tips on how to save time, save money, and then 20 tips on how to save time with your food. So before we even get to the recipes in your first book, like, we already feel like, okay, there is a way to do this that makes sense. It's clearly laid out. You don't have to do all of the tips that you provide, but whatever fits in with your life makes, you know, getting to the pages where the recipes are, I think makes people feel, okay, this is manageable. And maybe like we can feel good and eat well and still make it to soccer practice, still make it to this meeting and that meeting. And it's just, I don't know, it's just really wonderful. And I love what you're doing. And I too have family members who have either passed because of complications from like type 2 diabetes or heart disease. And when my dad was 50, he had a heart attack and then a triple bypass, and he's still with us today, thankfully. But I remember in the hospital, the doctor was talking about the way, like, how do you eat? You know, you can prevent this. And I was like 21. So like smug and everything like 21-year-olds are. And I'm like, I'm vegetarian, because I was vegetarian at that point. I'm vegetarian. And he's like, you're on the right path. So listen to your daughter and start eating that way. And, you know, he goes back and forth now because my mom is vegan too. But it's just like, it's so preventable, and we could have this different quality of life by spending 20 minutes in the kitchen, as you show in your recipes.
It's wonderful that you had a doctor in that room with you and your father who understood the impact of nutrition. I have talked to a lot of people who have been in a similar position, including my own family members, who did not get that. And it was mm-hmm. more medication focused and yeah. not so much lifestyle change focused. And I always think, what could have been mm-hmm. had they had that information? And I'd like to think that they would have taken it super seriously if they knew the writing on the walls was there for the potential outcome. But I just don't know. I'm at a loss for why it wasn't prescribed in a lifestyle change.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking. It really mm-hmm. is. And these people go through medical school, they spend so many years learning all of these things, and they get like 4 hours of nutrition training. Yeah. And it's not even good nutrition training. I've heard doctors recommend paleo diets and keto diets, and it's so scary, the information that some people might receive if they get any at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why we're doing what we're doing, right?
Getting yes. out. Yes, yes, yes. And what's cool about it is that for me, a lot of my audience, they have children. Mm-hmm. And what I feel is the extra, extra, extra coolest about it is that their kids are going to grow up with a different way of eating. Yeah. And it's going to shape them as adults and help them live longer, healthier, happier lives. And it's more than just how you're eating in this one meal. It can cause change in future generations as well.
Yeah. It's something that I think we don't put enough weight on, if that's the right word. I can't tell you how many times, I don't have children, but I can't tell you how many times when I was in that phase of life where people thought maybe I was going to have kids, where they would say things like, you're not going to force your vegan diet on your kids, right? And I'm like, oh, the same way you force your meat diet on your yeah. kids. It's the same thing. But yeah, when I look at what I ate growing up, and my mom, she was home at night to make dinner, and it was always, you know, the piece of animal flesh at the center, and then, you know, like a potato or some vegetables on the side. But I didn't learn to love vegetables, so I'd always eat everything else and kind of pick at the vegetables. It wasn't until I went vegetarian and was forced to start looking at different things to eat, so I wasn't just eating pasta smothered in cheese all the time, that I started to be like, okay, I guess I have to learn how to like vegetables. And then I went vegan and I really had to learn how to make food taste good because I wasn't covering everything with cheese. And I think back to what it, how different it could have been if I had been eating this way then, or, you know, even if my mom had been more vegetable focused instead of meat focused.
I have my best friend, I've known her since we were about 12 and we're still very close today. And I remember I moved out of my family's house a lot younger than she did. And I would go to her parents' house and hope for the kinds of snacks that you expect to have at your parents' house, like Doritos or something like that. And I'd be like, can I have a snack? Thinking Cheez-Its. And instead she'd be like, I have some granola and some fruit. And I'd be like, what is this? And then we, after she moved out of her parents' house, we moved in together and she ate so healthy. She would eat a salad for lunch and I would never think, even now it's hard for me to think I'm going to be satiated from eating a salad at lunch. I just have it in my head that I need a proper meal. Mm-hmm. But a salad can be a proper meal and it can be really fulfilling. But when you're brought up with those habits, it's so much easier to make the change to incorporate a bowl of vegetables and legumes as a proper meal. Mm-hmm. When before you were saying, you know, you have animal-based protein and some vegetables on the side, that's what you think of as a proper meal. So it was a challenge for me to change, and it required not only the embrace of more vegetables as a staple of my diet, but also stepping outside of my comfort zone. Because I grew up eating a certain way, I hadn't had the familiarity with different flavors, and I had never tried so many international cuisines like Ethiopian or Vietnamese or Indian. And now I love those foods. And also I had never had butternut squash or kale or even brown rice. I grew up eating white rice. Mm-hmm. And so to step out of my comfort zone and to not think about it as a restrictive diet, but as one that embraces so many different types of flavors from different cultures and one that has an abundance of whole foods available. So many things that I still haven't tried today. Mm-hmm. I started growing my food in about 2020. During the pandemic, I started growing a lot of produce, and the varieties available at the grocery store are very limited in comparison mm-hmm. to what is available when you go to the farmer's market or are not thinking simply about transportation and storage, which is mm-hmm. often what they choose to grow at the grocery store, which I love simply getting groceries from the grocery store, but it's cool to try new things as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's something too, when you think about, so I went vegetarian in 2001 and you were vegan, probably around that time, right? Or before, if I'm doing math, some loose math.
I went vegan in 2000. Wait, what year is this?
2023.
I'm 36. I was 20 okay. when I went vegan.
Okay.
And
okay.
So that was 16 years ago. Math. Math is hard.
It is hard. So I was like, I'll just do some loose math here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 42. But I went vegetarian in 2001. And you kind of had to go, if you were looking for something that wasn't just TVP crumbles, you had to go to the health food store. And the health food stores by me were like one cold case and just rows and rows of vitamins and supplements, and then like a couple of heads of lettuce and a thing of kale. And now every like regular grocery store has countless vegan items ready to go. The produce section is so much bigger. But still, you're right that the variety is limited. And I feel really lucky because here in New Jersey, where the section I live probably about 20 minutes away from Ethos Farm, which is run by Dr. Ronald Weiss. He's been a talking head in like Eating You Alive and a couple of other documentaries. Mm. But so he's a traditionally trained medical doctor who then has kind of embraced the holistic piece of that. And he bought this farm in Long Valley, New Jersey. And the whole focus has been on this nutrient dense soil to create nutrient dense produce. And every year there's always something that they present to us at their market where I'm like, I've never even heard of this vegetable. So I love the encouragement to like, yeah, you can totally get what you need at the grocery store. But if you have a market or, you know, a farmer's market or something where you can check out and try something new, like build that into part of your day as well, or your weekly shopping, or however you can make it work. Cause there's so many good things out there.
Yes. And also keep trying it. I know that they say that about children, mm-hmm. but also adults. Like for me, it took me maybe 10 times of trying brown rice to like it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot nuttier and thicker, especially if you're doing short grain brown rice. And I was unfamiliar with it, and it took me not once, not three times, not five times, like 10 times to like it. And same with tofu. It took me quite a bit of time to realize that I can't eat tofu straight up plain. I have to cook it and treat it sort of like I would an animal protein. Like people season it, they marinate it, they prepare it. They don't just eat it straight up. And I encourage people to do that with tofu, and it really absorbs the flavors and the seasonings that you're adding to it just the way they would if they were trying to switch over from an animal-based protein.
Yeah. So that kind of makes it feel familiar, right? So people who are a little nervous about, I don't know how to make this food because I've grown up or I've been taught how to make animal products. It is very similar that way. So you can kind of, if you're into like marinating whatever you'd been marinating before, you just put a block of tofu in place of that. And
And if you're new to cooking and you're intimidated and maybe you don't have a well-stocked pantry yet, I know that spices can be a little bit expensive and you invest over time to build up your spice cabinet, but there are 50-cent packages of marinades or seasoning packets from like McCormick or something like that, that you can buy that it'll have a piece of chicken on it, but you can use those and it saves you a ton of money because it's basically a blend of seasonings, not animal-based at all. Mm-hmm. And you can use that to flavor your tofu or tempeh in a way that is economical and not having you buy a ton of different spices.
Yeah, that can be super overwhelming when you're new and trying to stock your kitchen. Some people feel like, oh, I'm making this change, I've got to do it all and have everything before I can get started. But I didn't even realize that they had small packets like that, because you look at the jars of spices and some of them can be like $10.
Yeah.
And like, how often are you going to use that one spice? Will it be every day? You don't know.
Exactly. There are a couple of things that you just said that reminded me of a couple of things. When I started running as an adult, I stopped after high school and then I started again in my early 20s. I read this book. I must have been in my mid 20s. I read this book, and in the book, he talks about how you don't have to go out and buy a ton of new running gear. Just see if you like running. Try it out. Like, go jogging for around the block. And it doesn't have to be this big thing where you need to get everything prepped. And I feel like when people are thinking about plant-based, they think of that too. They wait until January 1st and it's all or nothing. Yep. And they have to buy all of their bento boxes for meal prepping. And like, it's this big to do, but really it's so easy. And for me, as I mentioned, it was a gradual and slow change that was not thinking in the short term. It was not thinking for the month of January, I'm going to be plant-based. It was thinking forever. I'm going to continuously strive toward, for me, when I decided it was for animal ethics, it was doing the least amount of harm, but it could be to your body or to the environment or to animals, whatever your motivation is. It doesn't have to be perfection based. It could be doing your best until it becomes really comfortable and showing yourself a lot of grace for when you make mistakes or you do something that is not within your goal, the next meal you can eat plant-based again. It doesn't have to mean that you have to throw your hands up. It didn't work for you. It just means next meal, try plant-based again. Right. And that mindset is what has helped me stay vegan for as long as I have been.
It's that whole idea of like, it's progress, not perfection. Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
I feel like there's a lot within our society as a whole, but then even within the vegan community. And I totally understand the vegans who come from that perspective of, we need to stop right now for the animals. And so it's not okay for you to mess up. It's not okay for you to not be 100% here yet. I understand that emotion and where that comes from and that motivation to be like, do it now, because there are so many animals suffering so much every single moment of the day. But you made a good point there. That's not sustainable for everyone. And it's if we're thinking just for this week, I'm going to do it, not forever, then maybe, you know, it doesn't, we need it to feel like it's not overwhelming and that it works within our lives. So I like that you've presented this option to like, just keep doing it and just keep trying. And also like, remember why you're doing it, because that's so huge. If we forget, like, it's just like, don't tell yourself it's a diet. It's not a diet. This is like life for you, for the animals, for the environment. And when we think of it as a diet, of course, we're not going to be able to stick with it because that doesn't work.
I have had a lot of different jobs in the animal welfare space. My whole adult life, I've been very fortunate to work for animals and to help them live longer, happier, healthier lives. And so my first job was at a farmed animal sanctuary, and I did social media and ran their blog for them while simultaneously running plant-based on a budget. I felt the perspective that you shared just moments ago of the urgency. And I felt frustrated because I got to see it on a firsthand basis all the time, the way that animals suffered, not only when they were in the farms, but also when they left. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of physical pain that's associated with what they experienced there. And so I realized that it needed to change, and I took on a more aggressive approach in that time. Mm-hmm. But what I have found is that people get really defensive, especially when you're discussing change over food. So mm-hmm. if you're eating with someone poking at them, it's sort of like if they're poking at you about eating a burger or something like that. It's annoying. It's mm-hmm. you get defensive. It's not the best time. And so I have found through lots of different types of advocacy efforts that giving people space and helping them when they want it is the best solution for me. I've tried the different, I've gone to protests, I've handed out leaflets, I've done all of the things. And what I have found is that having someone watch a documentary on Netflix and then remembering that I'm cool as a vegan, mm-hmm. they're going to want to come and talk to me and be like, I just watched this Netflix documentary. I just read this book. My doctor just told me that I should try eating less meat. Like, all of those things are going to spark change mm-hmm. in a way that is not me sort of nagging at my loved ones. Right. And when they're ready, I am here to drop knowledge and mm-hmm. give them all of the tools and resources. And I have found that out of all of the things that I have tried, that has been the most impactful and inspiring change beyond the conversation.
Yeah. I found the same thing. And now when people come to me and they say things like, my doctor just said, I just watched this documentary, I am like overjoyed. Like, yeah. Yes, let's talk about it. And it is, I found that those people that have come to me with those types of things, and that's been my approach, they're either on their way or they're vegan now, or, you know, they tell me like, I know I'm not vegan yet, but mm-hmm. I had to replace my shampoo and I heard you in my head and I made sure that I got cruelty-free and vegan shampoo. And yeah. they're so proud and it's just wonderful. And I'm so proud for them. And it just feels, it feels good and it feels sustainable. And that's what the animals need. They need sustained veganism, not a month here, a month there.
Yes. And another thing is that you mentioned, being excited for your friends. Mm-hmm. When we're celebrating, I feel like as a person who really loves words of affirmation, if you tell me you're proud of me, I will do it forever. Like I'll do the thing forever. And so instead of being like, oh, I can't believe you did this, that's not vegan or whatever, encouraging them when they are making changes toward more cruelty-free or vegan products, celebrating it, encouraging them to continue mm-hmm. will go really far. I remember I did a YouTube video a long time ago. My friend Michelle and I went to my parents' house and we were doing a video on how to swap out products that you use in your household all the time that are not cruelty, not that are not cruelty-free. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of just like swapped them in the video. So you take out the Windex and you put in the seventh generation or whatever. Yeah. And my mom, we used my mom's dogs and she has two beloved dogs. They are her family. That she loves them so much. So we used them and we talked about how animals are tested on. And she watched the video after we produced it. And she was so moved because mm-hmm. we had her dogs in the video yeah. that she decided to not buy products tested on animals and now looks for the cruelty-free symbol.
That's awesome.
And I could not believe it. Like the fact that if we influenced one person and that was my mother, I yeah. celebrate that win so big time. And and same, my parents now only buy soy riso instead of chorizo.
Oh, nice.
And although they're not vegetarians, although they do things that I am rolling my eyes at in other places, they buy cruelty-free products and they don't eat chorizo. And I think, oh my gosh, this is huge. That's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. It's just absolutely. A shift in perspective. And it makes me happier too, because the world can feel so heavy mm-hmm. when you are looking for the negatives. And when I've switched to look at the positives, all while still working toward helping animals and helping the environment, mm-hmm. I feel like it's more sustainable for me.
Yeah.
To do this work long term, if I'm looking for the happy occasions where people are making a switch instead of all of the ways that people are not. It just, I don't think I could do this work forever in the way that I want to if I lived in a dark place.
Oh, definitely. Definitely not. It really, there is so much of that. When if you allow it to just take over, we're no good then for the animals, and we're not serving our purpose then.
And also, where does it end? Like,
right.
There's much all over. So
yeah.
I acknowledge that those things exist, but I am focused more so right now on the positives that are occurring and the ways that plant-based, you mentioned that you had to go buy soy crumbles. People don't even know what TVP is anymore. Right. And so the fact that we're able to go not buy one vegan cheese, but like 15 vegan mm-hmm. cheeses and 40 plant-based milks and like so many options. It's yeah. just so telling of what I hope to be is a more compassionate future.
Yeah. I hope so too. That I see it that way as well. And too, for people who feel like, oh, veganism is like, you have to be so perfect, or what if, you know, the question I get sometimes is, I went out to eat and I ordered a thing that looked like it was vegan. I told them not to put cheese on it. And it turns out they put, you know, Parmesan in my pasta dish and I didn't know. So I'm not vegan anymore, right? And my answer to that, because if we look at the definition of veganism, which explicitly says as far as possible and practicable, when something like that happens, I think we don't take your vegan card away. You didn't know, and it wasn't an active choice. There's a big difference between eating something someone has prepared for you, you asked, you shared what you needed, and they didn't come through, versus ordering a cow cheese pizza. Like, that's a big, that's a big difference. And even just, we don't live in a vegan world. We, some of us need to buy a car. Cars are full. Even when you get the ones that have, you know, non-animal leather and all that, there's still like animal products in your tires or in some of the parts to make your car. So we can't be like 100% pure. And like, that's not the point anyway. I want to encourage people that even when they have these moments where they think, oh, I think I messed up, like, keep going. Because
And even if you messed up on purpose, maybe you drank too much and went through the drive-thru and made a bad choice. We've all made different bad choices in our lives, and it doesn't stop us from moving forward and trying to better ourselves. And so I've heard that before, and I want to encourage people to understand that they can choose plant-based. It's about the long game, and it's not this one meal that is defining who you are and who you want to be forever. It's the meals we choose, the products that we choose on a daily basis forever that are going to make that determination. And if someone is telling you otherwise, tell them to talk to me, because I don't have the patience for that. I actually, in my community, if they're vegan police, I will just kick them off of, I will delete them. I will have them, you can manually unfollow people, have people unfollow you. And I am, because my audience is primarily non-vegetarian looking to eat more plant-based, actually 65% of the people who follow me are trying to eat more plant-based, and it's very new to them because they're just stepping in. I really am protective. And if there are long-term vegans who feel like they're not, the other people aren't doing enough, I usually like shield them and like mama bear and make sure that they're having a good experience so that they can continue feeling like this is a safe community for them and that they want to explore it further.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. There's really, as far as I'm concerned, there's really no need for that. And I feel like it hurts the vegans themselves too, because it goes back to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, all of that negativity. And when you just live in that, it's hard.
I also feel like on the internet, people have become really comfortable being worse off versions of themselves. And you never know what the other person who's receiving your words is experiencing. They could have had the worst day of their whole life, and you don't want to be the person who makes life harder for anybody. Even if, I don't know, I have some strong opinions, and I tend to think in terms, I have thought in terms of like, this is right, this is wrong. But even then, I don't want to make anyone feel, I don't want to push anyone over the edge to make them feel like life is too hard or something like that. And so I don't think that it's impactful to be mean on the internet, period.
Yeah. Agreed. You know, if we're thinking from, even from a vegan perspective, we're motivated by compassion and kindness. And it just, because the definition within the word vegan is focused on the animals, the other than human animals, doesn't mean that we don't have compassion and kindness for other humans. So it's important to remember that we don't have to beat each other up if they're not meeting the expectations that we have set for them. Because we're all living, we're all having a different experience. Just be kind and compassionate. And, you know, I follow you on Instagram, and I love your posts. They're always so much fun. And I see the interaction, and people really like enjoy what you're putting up there. And one of my favorite things that you do is that when you share a recipe, you'll say, hey, you want this recipe? DM me.
Oh yeah.
And so like there's that connection there too. It makes people feel seen and feel heard and appreciated for being part of your community. So I can only imagine in like so you have a Facebook group, is that?
I do.
As mm-hmm. well. So I can just imagine within this curated space too, just how really loved people must feel and appreciated for being there.
Thank you. It actually, it's big now. It's bigger. It used to be little. I had like 5,000 people and it was really easy for me to manage. But now I have someone whose designated job it is on my team to make sure that people are supported in that group. And she, as I mentioned, we remove anybody who is trolling or who is mm-hmm. mean-spirited or who is not creating the culture of inclusivity that we're looking for, but also provide the kind of support when someone says, you know, they're offering free lunch at work now and I'm really torn, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Just encouraging those people to pack their lunch and take what's free. That's like the vegetables or the fruit or something like mm-hmm. that. And just giving them the extra support that they need, that it feels nice to be heard, even if you're not going to make a choice that's outside of your goals, just to be heard for a little bit, especially when you don't have a family who's supporting you at home. And a lot of people experience this with their kids saying, I don't want that, or their mm-hmm. spouse not on board, or it's hard at work. I was actually at Subway yesterday. I was on a road trip with my family and we stopped at Subway, and the woman realized I wasn't getting any cheese or meat on my sandwich. And she said, are you a vegetarian? And I said, yes, I am vegetarian. And she said, I am too. I've been vegetarian for 7 years and I unfortunately have to like touch meat all day. And I was like, you know what? You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You can't, like, not everyone can have a vegan job and live right. there. Like she has to work for her family. She was saying also when she gets home, her kids really want her to cook chicken and she's really upset about it. And so I totally understand that sometimes life throws you obstacles and that you have to do what you have to do. And I don't think that makes you any less vegan at all.
Yeah. I like that. But it's again, that inclusivity that you're working towards, it really, it really comes through in everything that you're sharing today. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So you've got this new book out.
Yes. That. I came out with a book called Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy. And it's different than Plant-Based on a Budget, because when I wrote Plant-Based on a Budget, I was on a tight budget. It's very bare bones. If you look at the recipe photos, it's very simple. It comes from a stance of simplicity, and I personally cook like that. I want people to see it as approachable and easy, mm-hmm. but I focused more so on the budget portion, which is sometimes calling you to use more of your time to make things from scratch, like pizza dough or bread or things that sometimes require more time. And with Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy, I wrote it from my current place in life, which is very strapped for time. Sometimes I'm thinking, how can I even throw together a meal mm-hmm. while I'm on the go? And so I focused on trying to save as much time as possible. A lot of the meals have about 15 minutes active prep work. Oh, wow. I tried to keep things like the ingredients list really limited to 7 ingredients or less. And I put in a lot of optional additions and swaps for people who may have a bigger budget. And I did that in Plant-Based on a Budget too, but this is more extensive, where you'll have a little list of your main ingredients that will make a good recipe, but then a ton of additional swaps or add-ins mm-hmm. that can enhance the flavors if you have the budget or if you have them on hand. I also gave one similarity is I also gave room for people to write in their own notes. And I had my testers, I worked with 100 recipe testers. I had them include their tips Nice. And they live in different places. They have different life experiences. I don't have any children, and it's hard for me to say what kids like because right. I'm not around them. I don't hang out with kids very often. And yep. so to have parents say, kid likes this, and this is how I change it up a little bit so that they love it, mm-hmm. It was very helpful.
That's awesome. I love that. My version of plant-based on a budget has so many notes in it. Many of them have gone beyond the lines you've provided. I have little legends of like the super, super favorites and like the favorites and the ones that I mix together. But that's such a great offering that you put in your cookbooks, that ability to just write into a spot. Yeah.
Thank you. I learned how to cook using cookbooks. And at the time I was on a tight budget. And so some of the ingredients I couldn't afford, or maybe I had something that was similar enough on hand mm-hmm. and I would try it out. And there's one cookbook that I've probably made about 60% of the recipes. I got it. It was my first ever purchase. And I write, not my favorite, super love, didn't turn out perfectly, we'll try again. Added in some walnuts and some cinnamon, like whatever it is, it's just filled with notes and food splatters. And yep. I wanted people to have that flexibility and permission. Sometimes people don't feel comfortable even creasing their cookbooks, like mm-hmm. they try to keep them pristine. But I want people to use it up, wreck it. Yep. And show it some hardcore loving in the kitchen, because it makes an author feel so good when it has been used up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's peanut butter splashes, soy sauce. I've got some cookbooks that I've had for, you know, decades now, where the pages, every one of them is like wavy because they've been wet so many yep. times.
Yes.
And it doesn't exactly they feel loved. Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. You'll know it's extra loved when like the binding is starting to fall apart a little bit.
Yep. And start taping it back together.
Yeah. Although someone recently brought me, I was at a PCRM event last week, and someone brought me my book, which they had bound spiral binding. Oh, okay. And they said it's only $7 to do at like Staples or something like that. You can take any cookbook and they'll bind it in a spiral way so that you can open up pages and like make it show only the one that you're looking at. And if your binding falls apart in any way, then you can replace the binding without having to purchase a whole new book.
Oh, that's really cool. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. You know what? There was a little something. So this weekend is kind of a holiday weekend. This part of this week has been a holiday. And then this weekend coming up is, you know, people are still celebrating. I'd love if you would maybe share some tips on how you navigate these family events where you know that it's going to be a mix of vegans and we'll call them pre-vegans, whether they get there or not, whatever. But anything that you have to share from your perspective.
Well, if I'm going to someone's house, I always bring something to share that's fully vegan, and double that up because everyone's going to love it. Pick a good recipe. And it's so funny because I used to bring just something for me to eat to make sure that I was going to be covered. But everybody always wants to try something that I'm bringing. So then I get a very small portion. So now I like double, triple that up. And if I am hosting, it's always all vegan. It is sometimes disappointing to my family members. And sometimes people don't want to come, which is totally fine. But I have done things in two ways. If you're talking about something like Thanksgiving, you can do a potluck, a vegan potluck. And what I do is I create a spreadsheet. Ours is a Friendsgiving. I create a spreadsheet with a lot of favorite recipes. Of course, people can bring their favorite vegan recipes that they want. Sometimes they're Thanksgiving oriented, like vegan mashed potatoes. And sometimes it's totally random, like just a recipe that they like, that they knew was vegan and wanted to share. And I bring either of them. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I always give for people who are a little bit more new to cooking or cooking plant-based, I give options in a spreadsheet and have them sign up on that spreadsheet so I know what to fill in.
Mm-hmm.
That way I don't have to do all the labor. For my husband is Jewish and we observe all Jewish holidays. And so for Passover, which is what we're observing right now, I am doing two different ways. One, we're also doing a potluck for his coworkers. Like everybody from his work can do it in the same way, where I'm offering recipes that they can bring if they want to. Otherwise, I'm going to cook everything else. But the other way of doing it is you can cook your vegan meal and have other people enjoy it with you. That's a lot more labor intensive. Mm-hmm. But if you really want people to have a good experience, like from my family last year, my parents, who are not Jewish, are very new to it. And they're very open to celebrating with us.
Mm-hmm.
But I would not ask them to cook because it's not their thing. They're trying to be supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to give them a really good experience. And I made our Seder dinner for us. Mm-hmm. So it really depends, but you can enjoy all of the foods that you love and make them vegan. And what is so awesome right now is that there are a million people on social media who specialize in one particular thing. My focus is being on a budget. That is the one thing I talk about all the time. But there's someone who does vegan Jewish food. There's someone who does vegan Mexican food. There's someone who does vegan Southern food, or pick a country. There's someone there who's doing vegan, that version of food. And so it's really amazing. You can be really supported online and find your people. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Thank you so much for that. I think that'll be really helpful for a lot of listeners. Even beyond, you know, this weekend, they won't hear it this weekend, but there'll many more holidays throughout the year. So Toni, I've got one more question for you. Because we're on Did You Bring the Hummus, we of course have to talk about hummus. So I would love for you to share either your favorite hummus or maybe your favorite way to eat hummus.
I went on a trip to Israel a while back when I got married, and I had never thought about hummus as a dish, a standalone dish. Mm-hmm. And we went to go visit my husband's family who lives there. And they served us straight up hummus with different toppings as a standalone dish. And it was really, really good. And I have since incorporated that into my life, where you can put different toppings, like, of course, your pita bread, but also your beans. You could put some lentils on it. You can put different pickled vegetables, and it is so good. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I am definitely going to give that a try.
It's very, very tasty.
Awesome. Toni, thank you so much for this time with you today. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back. So, how awesome is Toni? I love how she strikes that balance between dropping knowledge and celebrating the small wins with her friends, family, and followers. Also, doesn't her Facebook group sound like the nicest place on, or honestly off, the internet? To connect with Toni, visit her website, plantbasedonabudget.com. Follow her on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at plantbasedonabudget. On YouTube under Toni Okamoto, and Twitter at Plant-Based Blog. The links, as always, are in the show notes. And don't forget to pick up her latest book, Plant-Based on a Budget, Quick and Easy. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.